According to most politically aware American citizens, the word unconstitutional is synonymous with wrong, suggesting that politicians should enact policy that goes against the Constitution is almost like suggesting that law should be intentionally wrong. I spoke with Mike Seidman, who is a professor of constitutional law at the Georgetown University Law Center. I began by asking Mike, why is it that so many Americans seem to read their constitution as if it were a form of religious scripture?
You were certainly right about the way many Americans feel about the Constitution, and I think it's hard for people in the rest of the world to understand it. The Constitution is not the Bible. Treating it like the Bible is just a fundamental mistake. In terms of why Americans think this, this Constitution has come to be a kind of symbol of national unity. As long as it's just symbolic, that's fine. But unfortunately, this is a symbol that also has some pretty bad effects on our politics and public policy.
I wonder if you think there's something particularly Protestant about the idea of making an entire country or one's entire political outlook subservient to a written document.
Some scholars have suggested that people who think that they can have sort of direct access to the truth about government through the Constitution, that that is a kind of Protestant view as opposed to a Catholic view that where access to truth or to religious truth is mediated through some other organization. This is all speculation. Wherever it comes from, it is a fact that Americans treat the Constitution, or many Americans treat it, almost as if it were scripture. And that has the effect of cutting off debates that I think we ought to have, because there are provisions in the Constitution that are very old, archaic, and get in the way of sound government.
Are you really suggesting that American lawmakers and Supreme Court judges should be allowed to disregard the Constitution?
Well, I'm actually suggesting just that, but I do want to take a little of the sting out of the answer. I'm arguing that we ought to get rid of constitutional obedience. It doesn't follow from that we ought to disobey everything that happens to be in the Constitution. There are some provisions in the Constitution that are wise and some that are absolutely vital. And in that category, I would put things like fundamental civil liberties, like freedom of press and speech and religion, and guarantees of liberty and due process and property. And then there are other provisions in the Constitution that nobody would claim are essential for a just government, but the fact is we've been doing them that way a long time, and it's probably not worth changing. So, for example, the fact that the president serves for 4 years rather than six, or that, you know, we have a two-chambered legislative body, or we have states. Those are things that just probably are not worth messing with at this late date. So here's the basic point. To the extent that things are wise, or on our all things considered judgment, we ought to do them. They ought to be done because they're wise or because of our all things considered judgment. But we ought not to do anything just because a text written 225 years ago by people who had no idea what America is like demands that we do them. We ought to make our own judgment for our own country in the 21st century.
I think implicit in that argument is a criticism of a way that debate is often ended. Someone will propose something and then someone else will reply by saying, it's unconstitutional, and that's supposed to be the end of a discussion.
When you think about the things that we owe each other as citizens of a liberal democracy, one thing we owe to each other is to give reasons to our opponents for why we think that something ought or ought not to be done. So if somebody has a proposal and I don't like it, I have an obligation to tell the person why. It's not a good answer just to say, well, this is something you're not allowed to think because of a document written 250 years ago. In the UK, you've had two houses of Parliament for a very long time. The House of Lords has been selected in a particular way, but some people thought that wasn't such a good idea. And so they proposed changing the way the House of Lords was selected, and there was a debate, and in fact, there was change. In the United States, many people think that the Senate is not chosen in the right way. As it happens, every state gets two senators, no matter how large or how small, and people think that's really not fair. But in the United States, you're not allowed to debate that. The complete answer to the question, should we have a Senate that's differently composed, is you can't do that because the Constitution prohibits it. And that's not a good enough answer.
Thinking that maybe judges and politicians already ignore the Constitution to quite a significant extent, thinking of some of the most celebrated legal and political decisions, Obamacare, even the Emancipation Proclamation, all of these defied the Constitution in quite significant ways, didn't they?
You mentioned the Emancipation Proclamation that ended the property right in slaves in large parts of the United States. Almost everybody at the time the proclamation was issued by President Abraham Lincoln, including Lincoln himself, thought that the Constitution prohibited the ending of slavery in places where it already existed. Nonetheless, Lincoln went ahead and did it. And in the beginning, he had kind of a paper-thin constitutional argument. But by the end of the Civil War, it was very clear to everybody that this was a central war aim and that slavery was going to be ended not by constitutional means but by force of arms. And that's one of the formative experiences in the history of the United States. It's a little much when people say, well, gee, we just can't have constitutional obligation because the United States would disintegrate. Some of the acts of constitutional obligation have been really important in preventing the disintegration of the United States.
And looking more recently, to some extent, I have to agree with some conservative critics that the decision to uphold Obamacare doesn't really seem to have had any grounds in constitutional principles at all. It seems to be purely a political decision.
Here's another real problem about constitutional obligation. Many clauses in the United States Constitution are exceedingly vague. For example, what was at stake in the Obamacare case is what it means to regulate interstate commerce. So to decide that, you have to decide what interstate commerce means. When language is that open-ended, what inevitably happens is that liberals read the language to embody liberal principles, and conservatives read the language to embody conservative principles. It's hardly a coincidence in the Obamacare case that every justice appointed by a Republican president thought that Obamacare violated the Commerce Clause, and every justice appointed by a Democratic president thought that it didn't. What you end up having is, instead of the Constitution actually resolving political disputes, you have liberals and conservatives beating each other around the head and shoulders, complaining that each side has violated our foundational commitments. And that's not a useful way of having a discussion. We need to lower the temperature, not to raise it, and we need to start talking about what makes sense in terms of a policy rather than what these very vague words written a very long time ago mean.
You can find links to Mike and his research via our show notes, which can be found at poddelusion.co.uk. This is Salim Fadli for The Pod Delusion.